We might have stumbled onto the secret of Jason Tatum's success, plus Semi Ojeleye as the silver lining to the injury issues, and Marcus Smart versus the refs. It's the Friday Locked On Celtics Millies. Let's go! Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play, when the F's done I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melody. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to make sure that you are subscribed to the show. If you're a new listener, I want to thank you for checking it out and sampling wherever podcasts exist, however you get them. Go ahead and subscribe. Thanks to all of you who make this show part of your daily routine. Really appreciate that. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com. Here today with Chris Grenham of Forbes.com, one of like two people on the beat that doesn't have his own podcast at this point.
I'm staying independent, fighting the good fight.
It's like, I'm like, who can I get on now? Oh, no, he's got a podcast. Like, oh, he's got a podcast. She's got a podcast. All right, well, you know,
everyone do these. Settle for Grenham.
Nobody's like, all right, yeah, let's see. Let's scrape the bottle of the barrel. What do we got here? Oh, Chris Grenham. What's up? No, Chris is
That's
great.
Right. So,
glad to have you back in the beat. I know I've said that before, but it's very... For people who don't know Chris, Chris is a very good young basketball mind, and very happy to have him back on the beat. So let's talk a little bit here. I talked a little bit about the win over Cleveland, but let's get your thoughts. Was there anything from that game that kind of like stood out to you? What was the main takeaway from that?
Well, I mean, it'd be hard not to just focus on Semi right off the bat.
Sure, yeah.
Because I was not expecting that in any way, shape, or form. But it's nice to see. I mean, I'm sure you probably talked about some of this on your show yesterday. But for a guy that works so hard as he does, it is nice to see some of that pay off after a while. But he did a lot of really good things. Of course, he shot well. If he had a career high in threes, career high in three-point attempts, he had a career high in points. He spaced the floor really well. He passed the ball really well, and he was disruptive on defense, which he normally is. But that stuck out really well. That stuck out a lot to me. Jason Tatum's passing stuck out a lot to me. I thought he was great. His court vision has just gotten so much better in the last year. Of course, that just comes with maturing as any young player. But his court vision has been pretty exceptional of late, and his scoring is at the forefront of his skill set, so that's what gets a lot of the attention. But his court vision has been really good lately, and his passing comes right along with that and is beneficiary of that. So I thought that was really great. Anything else? I thought Rob Williams had a little bounce back game. He was not great in the second half against the Nets.
No.
yeah, that's putting it politely. I thought he was pretty good. So that was reassuring to see that he could bounce back. It was nice that the Celtics had this game on the, you know, less than 24 hours after that debacle on Tuesday night. So that in itself was just a blessing from the team's perspective.
Yeah, for sure. You know, going back to Tatum for a second,
yeah.
I think the one thing here that maybe sums it up best, and it's a thought that just popped into my head, and I want to get your take on it.
Yeah.
It feels like Tatum is very coachable. Like,
yeah.
His... And talking about the double teams, passing out of the double teams, like the Lakers game happened, and that was only a few games ago, really, in the grand scheme of things. And after that game, it was frustrating that they lost, and Brad was very upset that they lost. But also, like, he seemed kind of like, I don't want to say happy, but somewhat excited to be like, oh, yeah, Jason Tatum got double teamed a lot. We get to show him something new. And
yeah, right.
you go from that to the Utah game, the last game of the road trip, and he started passing out of double teams pretty well then, and he's gotten kind of like just a little bit better in each of the times he's been double teamed. And I think when you look at like this happened, the coaches showed it to him, he listened, he processed, he learned, he executed. And I think that's the course of this season for Tatum all season long has been, he did something, it's not quite working, let's look at the film, what worked, what didn't, listen, learn, execute. And it all kind of sums up to, and you want to make sure the proper credit is being given, he is doing the work. He's right. The guy that's going out there and doing this work and putting it together. It's his level of talent and hard work that makes this all possible. But in combination with that is the openness and willingness to be coached, and not just by Brad Stevens. And this is not a play to get Brad Stevens, you know, credit for some, it's the entire coaching staff. It's all of the coaches that work with him, the entire staff, and the veterans on the team, Marcus Smart, Kemba Walker, the other guys, his other teammates who are like Gordon Hayward, who are pulling him aside and may have something to say to him. He is willing to take all of this information in and say, you know what? This isn't just my way of doing things. He has processed all of this stuff, and we're seeing this whole thing come together. Chris, I've never seen, I can't think of another guy that all of a sudden one day was like, boom, now I've got a complete game.
It happens so fast in all facets, defensively too. His team defense improved so much dramatically from where it was at the beginning of the year. And that it doesn't happen within the same season. Like, it's not supposed to happen like this.
No.
This isn't the way it's supposed to go. But I think it does come back to him being so coachable. And Brad talked about it. I don't even know what game it was. It was a couple games ago. It was when Sam asked the Kai Tem question.
Yeah. But, Jan Packer for prefacing a question with taking a Kaizen approach.
He
that
needed
was awesome.
To get Kaizen in, and he did. He got it in. So shout out.
Very on brand.
Shout out, Packer. Very on brand, but in a very on brand response from Brad. He didn't even acknowledge the Kaizen comment and just kept on going. But within his answer, he had a little interesting anecdote about, I don't know if it was a preseason game or if it was a regular season game.
Yeah, I think it was a preseason game, yeah, against Charlotte.
It was a preseason game. Yeah, against Charlotte, right. And he was saying that they threw a set at Tatum that they hadn't gone over, and he was kind of flustered by it. And a possession or two later, they did it again, and he knew exactly what to do. So it's, yeah, he can adjust on the fly like that. And obviously you need talent and you need a tremendous basketball IQ to be able to adjust in situations like that, especially when you're 18, 19 years old. He's perpetually 19, actually, so I should add 19. But I think the coachable factor is extremely important, and this might be a stretch, but I really think it goes back to kind of the way he was brought up. It seems like through all of these deep dives that people have done on Tatum, whether it be Kevin O'Connor's last week or earlier this week, whenever that was for The Ringer, there's been plenty of deep dives on him. And it seems like he has been brought up in this basketball environment where he was almost bred to be this basketball genius, this coach basketball genius. Like in KOC's piece, he was talking to Tatum's mom and basically saying how they kind of badgered Drew Hanlon when he was a younger kid, basically like, take my son on. I know you're working with Bradley Beal, who's a budding star who's about to go to Florida, but this is his protege who's 13 years old. Take him on. And the fact that he was then working with him at that point, it was like he's been bred to be this coachable guy for so long, and he has such a tremendous basketball IQ to go along with that, such a tremendous talent to go along with that. I just think right now, the adjustments we're seeing within the season, it's like all of those factors coming into one, and it's miraculous to see. Like, we knew he was going to be good, so I'm not saying it's a miracle that he's this good. It's a miracle that it's happening this fast, because he was having trouble still finishing at the rim at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. Like, his shot selection was still off at the beginning of the season, and now he's scoring, it seems like, 30 points every night. His team defense is tremendous. His passing is ridiculous. Like, it's all coming together very quickly, and I think a lot of that, you're right, has to do with, yeah, the coaching staff has done a great job, but he's very coachable. He's open to adjusting his game, and he's just done a great job from a, you know, holistic standpoint from his game.
Yeah, it's fun to watch, and like I said, all of a sudden at the end of January, once he got named the All-Star, it's like it really flipped a switch.
Yep.
And, you know, you go back to this summer, where like he took a look at himself, and this is a very hard thing to do, because players at this level, especially third pick, could have been the number one overall pick. A lot of people are singing his praises. He already got, like, shoe deals, and you know he's a Jordan athlete, and he's making commercials. There's a lot of reasons.
His son's on a commercial. It's
right. There are a lot of reasons for him to be like, you know, I've made it. And yeah. And you know what? I'll make a comparison. Ben Simmons, when he was asked, I think it was in the preseason this year, about, you know, not taking threes, he said something to the effect of like, well, I'm an all-star. And that was like, that stands in stark contrast to Jason Tatum, who obviously has a willingness to shoot, but like one guy has this opinion of himself, like, look, this is working for me. Screw you. I'm not doing that. Another guy in Tatum has, I think, surpassed Ben Simmons at this point as far as overall game, because his overall impact, like Simmons does some things at an elite level, but what Tatum is doing now, because of all these adjustments, he said, all right, my shot profile sucks, and so I'm going to take more threes. And he's added the step back, and he's added these all of these other little elements, and he still defends. And, you know, maybe he's not like an elite just one-on-one on-ball defender, but the team defense, the help defense, that block that he had last night was just huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just it's just wild to see the entire thing come together. And it's hard for a guy that has – you're supposed to have an ego. Like, that's what drives you at this level. And for him, for him to say, you know what, I need to do X, Y, and Z to get better. And now the passing thing is, to me, the next two things that he needs to do is work on his passing and his ball handling.
And yeah.
If it's obvious to me, I'm sure it's obvious to him and the people that are around him, you know that he's going to get a max contract. He could, if he makes an NBA, an all NBA team, he can get a super max extension, a designated player extension, or whatever it's called. And he would be, a lot of players sit there and be like, okay, I've done everything I need to do. I've gotten my big money. I don't need to do anything else.
I'm good. Yeah,
I'm good.
I'm set.
Like,
right.
But he has the potential to be like, you know what? I can be even better. And
yeah, I think he just sees it from that bigger view, which in comparison, like you made the Ben Simmons comparison. I haven't heard anything. I don't know. I just don't think Simmons looks at it like that. I think they approach the game and they approach their careers in different ways. And whether that's because of their upbringing, I have no idea. But I definitely think you're right. Tatum knows he can get to the next level. He sees what he has to do, and he knows that there's other things to be worked on. I don't think Simmons looks at it like that. I just don't think Simmons has the work ethic really in him that Tatum does.
Yeah, you know, it's hard for me to say because I'm not around the Sixers. And,
right.
You know, clearly he does certain things he has to be a professional basketball player at that level.
And a very good one at that.
You know, like he's still, you know, one of the upper echelon players.
Totally.
But you know, I do think that Tatum has passed him. And this and this is why. All of this is why. All right, let's come back and talk a little bit more about Shemmy. And in the context of the minutes that he's getting, because more injury news with Gordon Hayward. Surprise, surprise. We're back on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Let's start with the injury news. Brad Stevens hit the radio 98.5, and amongst the things that he said was that it doesn't look like Gordon Hayward's going to play Friday against Utah, which means he's out. And he said, Brad said before the Cleveland game that Jaylen Brown's probably out for at least a week. So two guys out, which means Shemi Ojeleye is going to get a fair amount of time. I wish the Celtics could get everybody together and be healthy so we can get a sense of everybody playing together and in a groove going into the playoffs. But if we want to look at it from a positive perspective, looking at Shemi's game against the Cavaliers, this is an opportunity for a guy like him to really get a lot of confidence And considering that the Celtics have just been unable to stay healthy all year long, they're going to need somebody in the playoffs to pull a move like Shemmy did. Somebody's going to have to come in and hit three or four threes because a team is going to say, well, hey, you've got no Hayward, no Jalen or whatever. We're going to start doubling Kemba. We're going to start doubling Tatum, and they're going to do the right thing. We just talked about their, Tatum's passing out of double teams. Somebody's going to get the ball in a position to score. And if in these final games of March and April, somebody off the bench can be like, you know what? I got this. I can step up if need be. Then maybe there's a silver lining here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a pretty nice, I mean, obviously you're not going to bank on 22 points from Shemi Ojeleye if someone goes down, but if you can get that spark from an individual each time, it doesn't have to be the same person every time, but like that bench spark is something that's definitely needed for Shemi in his own realm. I mean, how nice must have that? Obviously he got kicked in the groin, so that doesn't help. So watch that. But other than that, last night was like perfect, right?
Because
he hadn't played. He played double digit minutes against Houston, double digit against Portland and the Clippers. Before that, like, it was very sporadic in the month of February. Very, very sporadic. He was playing decent minutes toward the end of January, but he had been really, really minimal minutes lately. Not a lot of points at all. He hadn't scored in his last three games. Before that, it was less than five for the majority. So from a confidence standpoint, to add Shemi into that bunch that, hey, maybe Shemi could give us a spark tonight. Maybe Brad Wanamaker could give us a spark tonight. It's just an additional guy to have coming off the bench, because you're right, you're going to need that at some point in the playoffs. Like, that's just the way the playoffs go. It's a long, grueling process, and if you make it far enough, you're going to need someone to give you a spark off the bench. And it's nice to kind of toss him into that rotation now where, hey, that's a possibility because you're going to need it.
Yeah. I mean, that's sometimes the playoffs are just a battle of attrition.
Like, yeah.
Who can survive? This is such a long season. You know, we talk in terms of like Kemba Walker, Kemba playing. He's probably going to play more basketball this season than he has in any single season in his pro career, if you factor in the USA stuff and all of the playoffs. Like, he's won what, two playoff games
in
his entire life?
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, it was funny when, I forget what game it was, but when he was asked, so was this like a playoff atmosphere? And he's like, you asked the wrong dude about the playoffs.
Ask me. But you're right. He's gonna be in a different place come the end of the season than he has been at any point in his professional career.
Yeah.
So he might need a spark here and there. And there are a lot of times, people, just as a reminder, people in my mentions, and I'm sure yours as well, be like, well, Tremont can pop up. Tremont can't play.
That's true.
In the playoff.
Yep.
Way guys are not eligible for the postseason, so he's out. So you're gonna need a spark from the bench group that you're looking at right now.
You know?
So adding Shemi into that mold would be very nice if he could give you a consistent or inconsistent, if that's what you need, punch off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, and look, he's been asked to guard Giannis in the past.
Right.
So Brad Stevens, if there's anything, he has a certain amount of guys that he trusts in certain situations. And if you look down that bench, there aren't many guys that have earned his complete trust. There are going to be guys that he has to roll with. Like, Grant Williams is probably going to have to play some minutes somewhere along the road here in the playoffs. You can't not play him. And he's a rookie. And, like, I think the Brooklyn Nets game is a great example of some of the rookie that's obviously still in Grant Williams. Like, his game is so mature, I think, that you almost forget sometimes that he is a rookie. But the inbounds play where he kind of almost like turned it over.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. Where he had Marcus Smart kind of coming up the sideline, and Marcus was open and open right in front of him.
Yeah.
But I think that Grant was so focused on the play developing and getting it to, I think, Daniel Tice, that he was just, he wasn't fully aware of everything that was happening on the floor.
Yeah, tunnel vision on. Rookie tunnel vision, yeah.
Exactly. So he was trying to execute the play. This is what coach wants. I'm going to do what coach wants. Rather than some other guys like Marcus Smart, who blatantly said, like, yeah, the Celtics, the coaches have a plan for me defending, but I can freelance within that, and they trust me to do that.
Right.
So those situations have to go to somebody that he trusts. And I think Shemi is clearly a guy that he has trusted in the past and trusted to play these minutes after having not played minutes in the past.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I mean, you're right in terms of matchups. Say they get pinned with Milwaukee, Brad obviously trusts him with a matchup against Giannis because that's a brutal matchup one way or another. It doesn't matter how you cut it, but he trusts him there. And you're right. I don't think Brad's going to turn to a guy like – he's not going to throw Javante out there for really quality minutes. His minutes have slowly fallen over the last month, over the last couple of weeks or so, and he's fallen out of the rotation if he ever was really considered in the rotation. So you're right. To have another guy like that on the offensive side, that's within Brad's trust tree. I'm going to start calling it that. I like Brad's
trust tree. I like
that. Picturing Brad's office, there's just a gigantic tree diagram on his board, and he has faces. I enjoy picturing that. So let's throw Shemi up there.
Is it hand-drawn? Did he draw it himself?
Oh, it is completely hand-drawn, yeah, and it's surprisingly good. It's we didn't know that Brad was this good of an artist.
He's like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like him and Tommy Heinsohn are doing like still like landscapes.
Yes, yes. Tommy's sitting up in a beautiful posture and Brad's drawing him. Yeah, just like that. So when we think Brad's being coy about lineups, he's actually just drawing in his office. But I think this is it's definitely a positive. But what it all comes down to is the confidence part for Shemi, because if Brad is going to trust him, you want him to be confident on the offensive side. And for a large portion of this year, it just didn't seem like he was all there offensively, to a point where people were like bailing on him. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Like, well, Shemi's run is over. Like, it's just, he's going to go overseas end of this year, next year, whatever. And so the fact that he is finding a way to contribute on the offensive side, because we always knew he could contribute on the other end. The fact that he's kind of bringing it all together, granted it's only one game, but he's showing something on that side, is great for the team, but even better from his standpoint.
Absolutely. All right. Marcus Smart got fined. We're going to talk about that after the break. If you're a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all of the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans, but you may not know that Locked On Celtics is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Celtics fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners, and not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Celtics fans in a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, let's put your company right here on this Locked On Celtics podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. So text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising to let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising, and we look forward to hearing from you. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Well, Marcus Smart avoided a suspension, as we kind of all assumed, because he played in the game against Cleveland. They wouldn't have let him play if they thought they were going to suspend him. But he did get fined $35,000 for his outburst after the Brooklyn game on the officials. And it was, you know, pretty animated. Celtics security had to kind of hold him back. And there were some choice words. I could tell that he was calling a referee horrible. And it was just not great. There was a lot of frustration there. Part of why he was fined $35,000, the league says, quote, "The amount of Smart's fine also reflects his multiple prior violations of acceptable on-court decorum." So I think, and I don't know if you noticed this, Chris, in the Cavaliers game, when Marcus was not playing well through maybe the first 2.5 quarters, there were times where he wanted to say things to the officials, and he just stopped himself because, I think, because of this. Because he probably knew something like this was coming, and he just didn't let himself kind of go down that emotional path. And I just wonder how much this is going to impact him moving forward. If the league sits there and says, hey, look, he's got priors, you know, and if he's going to go like this in future games, and maybe some of these officials that he was berating are going to referee games that he plays, future playoff games, like, he's got to make good. He's got to go up and say something to these guys and, like, either apologize or something, because he can't have these officials not, like, he can't have that kind of taste in their mouth when they see him again.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to affect him going forward. I mean, you would think it would be in his mind, and yeah, he would have to make good in some way, shape, or form. I definitely agree with what you said about the Cavaliers game. You could tell, I'm assuming it was impacting him because he knew some sort of fine, not suspension, probably fine, was coming down at some point. He had already met with the league, whatever. Even when he started to play a little bit better in the second half, he was still unhappy with, I don't know which official it was, but there was a couple times where he was unhappy and he wasn't saying anything, but he was just holding his arms out in the way he was almost like he was showing his wingspan.
Yeah,
he was just looking at a ref holding, and it was almost like, I want to say something so badly, but I know I can't, so I'm just going to hold my arms out and stare at you right now.
Yep.
So we've seen how it initially impacted him even before the fine came out. I'm sure it will impact him at some point down the road, but you're right. He should make good in some way, shape, or form. You don't need this kind of breathing down his neck for the rest of the year that obviously would cause someone to play tight. I don't know how it would impact him. I'm not an NBA player. I can't go into the mind of Marcus Smart, but it's got to have some sort of impact, I would think, right? You got to imagine that's going to be in the back of his mind, especially the way this was worded, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Look, when you're a player and you sit there and you have the league saying to everybody, hey, we're going to ding this guy for more than we would normally ding a person for because he's done this before and we're kind of sick of it. Like,
yeah.
And after the Houston game in Houston,
I was just going to bring up the Houston game. Yeah.
Yeah. He expressed some frustration. He didn't get fined for that.
I was shocked.
I was too. In fact, I was sitting there talking to Adam Himmelsbach, and we were going through like things that he had said in the past that he got fined for. We thought that he might get like fined, even suspended. Like we weren't sure how bad it was going to be. And they kind of let him off the hook.
Do you think they let him off the hook for those because they maybe saw the calls that he was complaining about? Because in my opinion, I think he was on the right side of those. Like, I think he kind of did get ripped a little bit on some of those calls.
So I think that goes along with, wasn't it Damian Lillard who had that same thing after the goaltend?
Yeah.
And he went off and the league was like, they just didn't do anything, which was basically them saying
why he was like, angry, and they just kind of let him off. Yeah. Now we're even.
Like we get it. You know, you kind of have a point, so we're not going to suspend you, or we're not going to fine you.
Right. I think it might have been somewhat similar, like along those same lines with the Houston thing.
Yeah. But afterwards, he was in that locker room just saying, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, which was funny because we're all sitting there saying, like, how many NBA players stood in that same locker room saying the exact same thing after playing James Harden, saying, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Like,
it's got to happen so often in Houston. It's got to be insane.
We're talking to some of the Houston reporters. They're like, oh, yeah, we've heard that before. So like that's a common refrain in the visiting locker room at the Toyota Center. But
the visiting locker room attendants there are just so sick of hearing that for the last couple of years. Just so annoyed.
They must have they should have like a scream pillow. Like when you walk in after playing James Harden, they should just hand out pillows for players to scream into.
One
in every locker. So you just walk in, you're like, ah!
Walk by the missing locker after every game, and you just hear muted screams.
Just get your frustration out before you talk to the media, and then you can kind of like get your wits about you and not get fined.
Save a lot of guys a lot of money.
Yeah, Yeah, that I think I'm onto something. Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, it's so weird. Like, I don't want to give too much. I've bumped into officials on the road. Like, I've bumped into officials. You know, you just get to talking. Like, we all understand. Like, we're all part of the same kind of ecosystem. So we have our private conversations and whatever. And everybody that I've talked to likes Marcus Smart. Like, they're like, oh yeah, he's a good kid, man. And maybe they're just saying that just because an official like saying like, oh God, I hate that dude. Like right. that, you don't want that to get out.
Not a great look. Yeah.
You know, but I think officials have to be a different breed. Like if you're a referee at an NBA level, like you can't be sensitive. And if any of them are sensitive, and I'm sure like, as I say that there's, people are like running through their Rolodex of like, well, this guy seems pretty sensitive and that guy seems pretty sensitive. And in the past, I'm sure there have been like Joey Crawford is like the poster boy for sensitive officials. But and he addressed like, yeah, I had to go through like anger management. Like I shouldn't have done some of these things like like giving technicals to Tim Duncan for laughing on the
bench. Causing you from the bench. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. but like that's my way of saying like it kind of goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so much emotion in a game. It's hard for a player, especially with Marcus Smart, because the level of emotion with which he plays is so high.
Right.
But he has to also understand like this message from the league is like, we get it, but you can't keep doing this.
Right.
Like, so I don't know. Go ahead.
No. I totally agree. Like the league is at least trying to express and expressing through this release that, yeah, like we understand, but it's getting to a point that it's going to get, it's only going to get worse from here, essentially. And so you got to reel it in at some point. And I think he understands that. I thought he understood that before the Houston game, but then I thought this was going to happen at that point. So who really knows where it's going to go from here? The from a bird's eye view, Smart, I think, is so much better than he was earlier in his career from this standpoint. Like he used to be much more, I don't even know how to say, just off the cuff on the court when it came to refs and it came to other people. I think he's much more reined in at this point. So that I'm trailing on because I'm seeing that Jaylen Brown is out there.
I'm like, oh good, Chris is talking and get to tweet that Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown are out. That's
why you brought me on the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Either way, I think Smart is at a better point right now than he was earlier in his career. But you're right, the league is expressing like, hey, this has to stop at some point because we're going down a road that's not great for either of us at this point.
Right. There has to be a little bit of give on both sides.
Yeah, exactly.
It's simple as that. That Marcus Smart, no one is saying like Marcus Smart, just shut up and dribble. Like you are allowed as a player to express frustration. What you can't do is constantly just berate. You can't constantly be complaining. And you can't, after having a game where the calls went against you, you can't go out there and be like, the league hates me, everybody hates me. You would think that if I was, you know, defensive player of the year candidate, I'd get better calls. Like you just, that's hard for the league to stomach that stuff. But
and I think the league showed that pretty well in the way they handled the Houston thing and the way they handled the Nets thing. Like I think they showed both sides of that. And I would hope, and I think Smart probably gets that, you know, we'll see down the road, but I would think he understands that.
Yeah. And I just don't want, what I don't want is for somebody like some official to like take that personally. And I don't think so, because I do believe that they're better than this, but you also have like in the back of your head, when Chris Paul pointed out the untucked jersey as a delay of game penalty, then the next game, he got like two delay of games, which was so very blatant, obvious payback. Like,
yeah.
You know, so like they are prone to that. That showed that they are prone to that. So
hopefully
it doesn't come back to bite them. We'll see. I hope not. All right. Thanks for everybody for joining us. Thanks to Chris. Go ahead and read Chris's stuff at Forbes and follow him on Twitter at Chris Grenham. That's Grenham, G-R-E-N-H-A-M. Grenham.
Grenham.
Follow him. Great stuff from Chris. Follow the show at LO Celtics. Subscribe to the show if you haven't. Hopefully you enjoyed this show enough to become a subscriber. It goes right to your device whenever we post it, so we really appreciate that. A 5-star rating, a good review is also very much appreciated. And sharing the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.